Radio Influence. Podcasting redefined.
Welcome back to another edition of the MMA Report Podcast, the St. Patrick's Day edition of the podcast. And this episode of the show is presented by HelloFresh. Come up here later on in the show. Going to tell you about HelloFresh. It's giving the MMA Report podcaster 12 free meals, including free shipping. We'll tell you about that later on in the show. But we have got a ton to get into here on this edition of the show. Daniel, as always, great to be here on a late Wednesday afternoon talking to you. I spent the past couple of days in Orlando, and first off, Dan, I gotta tell you, so Monday night I'm in Walgreens getting some, you know, waters and things for the hotel room, and two things happened to me. A, clearly people do not know what 6 feet means, and two, I actually saw multiple people with no mask inside of Walgreens.
Yeah, and that's crazy, but I've even seen that trickle down to where I live in the Rio Grande Valley. To jump on that, today while I was working, I stopped for Starbucks as I was feeding in some video, and there was a dude who walked in without a mask, and just no one told him anything. And Starbucks is a company where I think they would probably not be a big fan of that happening, but yeah, we're starting to see more and more of that, and I think there's definitely a bubble between like people like me and you who are super plugged into the internet, super plugged into media and journalism, and then just normal people who maybe aren't on Twitter all the time, aren't consuming that, where it's just business as usual.
Dude, I remember I was standing in line. My first thought was like, I literally want to turn around to the dude next to me and go, seriously, dude, can you back up a little bit? And then you know, these two people walk in with no mask on, and I'm like, seriously? Like, and no one said anything to him. Like, it was the craziest thing. We'll get into the fact
that. By the way, I completely buried the lead. I'm an idiot. I completely buried the lead. Where I live, Jason, is like, it's on the national news right now. South Padre Island has literally been on the national news for like NBC News. They've sent their reporters down because you have all the college students that have come down to spend their spring break. No social distancing, no mask, getting lit on the beach. I completely forgot to mention that. I just had to mention that.
That's not surprising, though. That's just not surprising. I'm not surprised by that.
No, I don't remember all of the sound bites from the dummies last year, last spring break, all the dummies.
And Oh, yeah.
They come again, a different batch out here. Yeah, it's very awful, but, when you're done crying, I guess you got to laugh.
Yeah, of course, we'll talk about the fact that the UFC is coming to my home state of Florida for a full capacity show next month for UFC 261. Also, talk a little bit about some of the things that happened last weekend at the UFC card, including, how transparency really is needed when we have bad judges' scorecards. Also, what should the UFC do with Leon Davis? Other things. Also, we'll talk about Saturday's UFC Vegas number 22, scheduled to be headlined by Kevin Holland and Derek Brunson. But, you know, Daniel, I wanted to start off the show by talking about something I saw when I want to say it was yesterday, on Tuesday, just kind of going through my timeline about this, new deal that the UFC, or I should say a partnership the UFC now has with Upshow and Johann Promotions. And of course, Johann is the promotions company that delivers UFC pay-per-views to the commercial industry, bars and restaurants. And obviously, I have a very unique perspective on this, and I think I'm probably the only one in the MMA media / podcast industry that has this perspective. So I'm in the management of a restaurant group, so I understand kind of how everything works. And you know, look, I read the press release, and my first initial thought is, I see exactly what is going on here. This is the UFC and Johann partnering with an OTT company to service the bars and restaurants that are looking for a streaming aspect of this. Just to kind of give a little clarification on this, the way a restaurant bar has been getting UFC pay-per-views, even during this digital era of the UFC, is still via DirecTV. You know, not to rag on reporters that say this is a big deal for the sports bar industry. You're wrong. it's a nice thing to have, but it's not a game changer. And Daniel, I was telling you this via text messaging. To me, there's three issues the UFC has with the commercial pay-per-view business, and none of this new deal impacts that. Number one is price. Every time I see one of the UFC sponsor posts on Facebook that is directed towards people in the bar industry about why you should have UFC pay-per-views, I always look in the comments section. Comment section always pretty much is basically complaining about the price. The second issue the UFC has that's not addressing this is a lack of audience that is coming out to UFC pay-per-views at this point, even before pre-pandemic and to where it is now. And a lot of that is due to star power. And I think it also goes along the lines of the UFC's issue that it's more about promoting the UFC brand than it is about promoting the fighters. And then I think the other thing that's really key with this is they don't have that major star that brings people into your establishment on fight night.
Yeah. Those are problems that transcend just this particular relationship. It affects all of their business. It's important to have those stars, and it's important to put on those fights that captivate the attention of the casual audience. And that's probably a big reason why Jorge Masvidal is getting that title opportunity against Kamaru Usman. You know, this is your realm. And I guess I have a couple follow-up questions for you based on what you've laid down. The follow-up questions are this. One, why is it that people are saying that this is a good deal, and why is that misconception wrong? Is how I guess I would frame it. And my question is basically, like, what is the difference between the direct TV deal for bars and this OTT deal? And by the way, something that wasn't clear to me was, does this OTT replace DirecTV, or can they do? Is that option still available on DirecTV?
No, that option is still available as far as I know. What it is basically this upshow. It's like basically it kind of, because I was doing some research on it, it's a cool product. Don't get me wrong. It is a very cool product for bars. You've likely seen it in your Buffalo Wild Wings. You know, you see like those trivia contests and highlights and things along those lines. That's what this technology is. But I think what is, as more things are being available on a streaming platform, that's what this is going to be. It's going to give that bar the option to buy it as a streaming platform as opposed to getting it, say, on your DirecTV package. So that's where it's for a bar that's going all streaming. That's where this makes the most sense. But offering $50 or $100 a month based on the package you have off a UFC pay-per-view, that doesn't change a bar's decision whether or not they're going to buy the UFC pay-per-view. Because here's a problem, Daniel. Kamaru Usman is a great fighter. One of the best fighters there is in the game. People don't come out to watch him. And look, I can't speak about what it's like for a bar, for example, in the Rio Grande Valley. But I can explain what it's like for a bar in the Tampa Bay area. Guys like Kamaru Usman do not bring an audience out. And that, to me, is one of the fatal flaws of the UFC's marketing strategy, where it's all about those three letters. How much does it, if I walk into a bar tonight and I'm just going to have a couple cocktails, Daniel, if there's a couple guys sitting around the bar, if I go, who's Kamaru Usman? Do they know or can tell me anything about him?
Look, Jason, here's the thing. All right, I want you. We're gonna do something real quick. We're gonna do a little exercise. Tell me which sports come to mind to you when I tell you just the three letters. Which sports come to mind versus which sports come to mind when I tell you they have superstars?
Oh, it immediately, the three that pop in mind is NFL, NBA, MLB.
So okay, now I would posit to you that NFL, NBA are superstar leagues, and MLB and NHL. Our team leagues, our three-letter leagues.
Okay, yeah, I feel what you're throwing down there.
I guess what I'm throwing down is the hottest sports in America, I feel like, are based around those stars. And it's as simple as, you know, if you turn on SportsCenter, they're talking about LeBron. They're talking about Drew Brees, Russell Wilson, Deshaun. They're not talking about Mike Trout and Alex Ovechkin. And all of that media capital is so valuable. And we've seen a strategy from the WWE to make it all about the WWE. And I just think that's such a mistake. Whenever you go for that quantity over quality approach, there is diminishing returns, and eventually those eggs come into roost. And so for the UFC, I really think, you know, they're just going to have to luck into stars like a Conor, like a Ronda. And they probably will, because there's such a large amount of people on the roster. Eventually someone's going to explode. But it's just dumb luck. I had one thought when we were having this conversation, and this is kind of a pivot from the UFC aspect, but I just wanted to pick your brain since you know a lot about the bar industry. So often we are always talking about what's next. We're always talking about futuristic, a la carte, things that cater to the consumer. What is next, do you think, in the bar industry when it comes to the type of services in addition to the drinks that you can offer people? Like, do you imagine a day in which someone goes to a bar and they can like stream something on Disney Plus while they're drinking? Like when you're looking at the future of bars, do you think the future is more of an isolated experience, or do you think it's more maybe it's a zag to the isolation of how we live our lives? It's more communal. Do you have any idea what the future of bar entertainment looks like?
Well, I mean, I think, look, that one of the things, and you see it right now, is how many times you go out to a restaurant, a bar, and people have their phone out and they're watching, you know, a streaming platform. I mean, how many times have I gone out on a Saturday night and just popped the ESPN Plus on my phone while me and the fellows are sitting there having some cocktails together? It's just popped up, and we're just kind of paying attention to what's going on. You know, one of the things that you're seeing, and it's happening right now in the bar and restaurant industry, how many times have you walked in? There's now a QR code that not only is that's how you can view the menu, you can also pay via that QR code now.
Yeah, it happened to me just recently when I went to a restaurant.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's just, I remember I saw that concept about 4 years ago in Dallas. We did not have a server. It was literally you had a food and drink runner, and you did every, and in this particular place in Dallas, they had basically a tablet. I'm not sure if it was an iPad, but it was some form of a tablet. And literally you did everything from that. You could pay for it. It had a credit card reader, had everything. There was no server. Like, that's what's going on in the industry. But what I think what this is, you know, look, if you want to go to a bar owner, you know, a bar general manager, and you want to say this is going to be a game changer for you to show UFC pay-per-views, I'm going to tell you where the conversation is going to start, where it's going to end. How am I saving money by going this platform? And look, I think that from a marketing side, and someone who runs marketing, I see a lot of advantage to this upshow platform. I think it's got some great tools, but I think in terms of the pay-per-view aspect, I don't think it's another, I think what it is. And I remember having this conversation with another bar operator where they had the conversation with Johan about a year and a half ago about, hey, could I potentially get this via a streaming platform? And I think that's all this is. It's about giving bars the ability to have it on a streaming platform as opposed to satellite. Because look, I don't think we're that far away from seeing more bars and restaurants getting their video packaging from a streaming platform as opposed to your standard, you know, cable satellite. I mean, look, I see the advantage of this, but like, I just, as someone who my perspective is just so different than anybody else in the MMA industry, I go, I don't see this as a game changer. It's a nice thing that's happening, you know, and how it could be beneficial to bars. But at the end of the day, if we want to get people out to our establishment to watch a UFC pay-per-view, at the end of the day, it's a star-driven business. And I love how you brought the WWE in the equation, because the WWE is in the same business. Let's not kid ourselves. You know, they are in the star-building business. Now, obviously, they have a lot, you know, they can create a storyline to create that star. But like, to me, I think that's the biggest issue the UFC faces, is instead of promoting that three letter brand, how about let's promote the fighters? And not to be, you know, a shill for Bellator, but I don't feel like, when I look at Bellator's marketing strategy, I don't think it's about the Bellator brand. I think it's about the fighters. The PFL, I think it's more about those three letters than it is the fighters.
Yeah, but the PFL is more about the system of the tournament. And for Bellator's approach, I think that's the right approach to go to. To me, that's the approach the UFC used for so many of their hot periods, for the Liddell period, the Ortiz, GSP, BJ, Silva, Lesnar. To me, those were the hot periods, and I think you can you can fall in the safety of this three-letter trap that we see. And I mean, speaking of the WWE, I had a flashback to growing up. I believe they would show WWE pay-per-views at Buffalo Wild Wings. I could be wrong about that, but I felt like they did at my local B-dubs, and obviously they don't anymore because the demand wasn't there. You know, as someone who's in the industry, what type of audience would a UFC percentage-wise, in terms of like filling up your building on a non-pandemic time, would a UFC pay-per-view have to draw for it to be considered a success for you?
Well, you got to bring in more revenue than it costs. I mean, at the end of the day, we're in the money-making business, you know, and it's all based on your seating capacity, you know. So, you know, let's just say it's costing you $1,000 to bring in a UFC pay-per-view, okay? You know what? Are the people that are coming into your building, are they coming into your building because you have the UFC? Or are they coming into your building because they are coming to your building regardless?
And the other thing is, it's like an opportunity cost situation where could you get that same amount of people in your building for $150?
Exactly. Like, I'll tell you this. I thought for the Conor pay-per-view in January, it was going to be a massive crowd. It was underwhelming for what I expected. And that was kind of like, I've noticed over the last, you know, say two and a half years, that the crowd has been dwindling. But I also think that in our current world, that there's a lot of things people are realizing they can do from the comfort of their home. You know, look, I think it's going to take the bar industry some time to recover from COVID, not just from the capacity issue, but people wanting or willing to go out. I mean, Adia, I'm sure you probably have some friends that their girlfriends maybe go, oh, no, you are not going out with the fellas to a bar. No, you are not. No, you're not. You know, but then there's some wives like, hey, go have fun with your fellas. You know what you're doing in terms of that. I mean, look, I think at the end of the day, it's about is the UFC has to get people excited about going out and watching. Like, I had someone last week say, do you think Stipe Ngannou 2 will be a massive event? And I'm like, I don't know.
Oof. I don't know either. I think it will be, but
like, this is a thing that gets presented to me and I present this to other people and I'll present it to my listeners. You operate a bar. It's going to cost you $1,000 to bring in the UFC for Ngannou Miocic 2. Do you spend it? Or do you just show other, you know, do you just show the NBA games on, you know, MLB, you know, NHL, that type of thing?
I mean, I'm going to have to really, really look at what the buzz is surrounding that event because it's a hard thing to predict. I mean, you know, and that's a shame because that's literally like the greatest heavyweight fight of all time, right? Like you have a like a GOAT level heavyweight matchup, and the fact that that's even a question probably does the best job out of anything of exemplifying the issue the UFC has with their relationship with being shown in bars.
Yeah, I mean, look, we have three operations that have shown UFC pay-per-views. I'll tell you, so we did not show the Jan Izzy fight. And I was actually blown away getting a phone call early Saturday evening of that night, basically saying, Jason, we're getting a ton of calls asking if we have the fights. Now, if I would have gotten those calls on Thursday, we probably would have bought the pay-per-view. I mean, I just, you know, it's just one of those things. And like, I was asked about a week ago, like, hey, you know, should we get this pay-per-view or not? And, you know, look, I'm the MMA guy, but also I'm looking at it from a business aspect of are people going to come in or not? I mean, I just think it's the reality is. And look, I'll say this. If you're an MMA reporter listening to this, go watch a pay-per-view at a sports bar. It is going to open your eyes. It's going to open your eyes. Get away from the MMA. And don't even worry about MMA Twitter that night. Just sit there and just partake in things. See how people are talking about the fights. I'm telling you, it's going to open your mind up.
Yeah, it would certainly be a nice little prick and pop the bubble. You know, a nice little, like those razor pricks, picks things you use that will pop the bubble right off. I mean, don't sleep on, I know Masvidal is a star, but don't sleep on the controversy of running an indoor event at capacity. being almost a good thing for that pay-per-view when it comes to like buzz.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I would tell you. So when I saw that news come across, when I was just kind of scrolling through my Twitter timeline yesterday, I wasn't shocked.
Why weren't you?
I saw it coming. You just saw it coming. You saw what was happening with Texas. And the fact that the UFC, you know, had reached out to multiple, you know, local governments to see if they would go ahead with these events. So, and of course, as you remember, when they did those events in Jacksonville, Dana White essentially went on record essentially saying, when we could do fans in attendance, we're coming back to Jacksonville. So, like, the timing of it is a little, you know, I'm surprised how quickly it's happening would be my thought. I'm not surprised that Dana White wants to be, if it's not the first, one of the first people to do an indoor full capacity event. I'm not surprised by that. I will tell you this. Part of me, like, I'm kind of surprised by some of the reaction to it. Like, I feel like there is a lot of people, or I should, maybe a lot's not the right way to say this, that there is a percentage of people that I, and this was just based on just scrolling down my Twitter timeline, Daniel, that I think they're rooting for the UFC to fail on this one.
Well, you know, it's a tough balance between maybe those who are rooting for the UFC to fail and those who are just seeing it and being appalled. And I can't disagree with those that are appalled. Look, the Texas Rangers are running at capacity. And me personally, Jason, you know me. I'm someone who's very cautious when it comes to big picture COVID movements. I'm like, I've always been more hesitant than not. So that's just my perspective and that's just my opinion. But when you talk about 15,000 people at capacity and worst of all indoors, that's a bad deal in the midst of a pandemic. And I know we're trying to get back to normal, but I do think that when I sit at home and I watch 60 Minutes, right, this Sunday, and they're talking about the variants of COVID, about how this disease is mutating, and there's some variants that may in fact give people who have gotten the vaccine problems. When I see that, when I see medical experts say, hey, America, don't fumble the ball when you're running in for the like, you know how DeSean Jackson, when he was running in for the touchdown and he got stripped? Don't do that. Hold on. Hold the line. Continue to do what you're doing. Don't get cocky. When I hear all that and when I intake all that media, that's why I'm personally not a fan of the move. But to wish ill will to the UFC is definitely not something I would agree with. I would hope that it is a success and people are safe. I just don't like the move.
You know, look, I would not put myself in that environment unless, like, I had bought a suite and it was just going to be me and the fellas who, you know, they're in my social circle anyway. That would be the only way I would be comfortable in doing it. But look, I hope the UFC succeeds. And there's times where, I mean, look, we can have our issues with local government, whatever it may be, wherever you live. But you just got to hope that the Jacksonville local government believes this is a safe thing to do. I hope the UFC succeeds in this. But for the people, like, I feel like there's certain people who are giving the UFC ammo to say, you want us to fail. You don't want us to succeed. I hope the UFC succeeds, but I'll say this. You want to do Kamaru Usman, Jorge Masvidal in front of an audience, it should not be in Jacksonville, Florida. It should be in Miami.
What's the difference in those two audiences?
Jorge's from Miami. Usman has trained his majority of his professional career in Miami. Like, you tell me, like, if you're going to do that in the state of Florida, Miami would have been my number one choice by far. And let's be honest about it. You could have put a very high price on those tickets. I think they sell out.
Yeah. I think they might sell out in Jacksonville too. And I will say, I'll look forward to watching the pay-per-view. I mean, it's going to be a great environment. It's just, I don't see how it's possible to be safe. The idea that people are going to keep their mask on is insane. Like, dude, every time I've gone to a movie theater, and I have gone to a movie theater, so it's not like I'm this angel of COVID safeness. I'm not, right? You take off your mask to eat your popcorn. People are going to be taking off their mask to be eating in that building, and they're going to be doing that. Now, you know, when it comes to COVID, the thing that really troubles me is, you know, I was reading a Texas Tribune article. It was a year into the pandemic. You know, it was giving me statistics, and I wish I had wrote them down, but it talked about how there were 45,000 deaths. But what really struck me, and I guess the point I want to get across when it comes to COVID and the way we deal with it is, a big portion of the state is very young in Texas, but obviously a big portion of the death rate in COVID is very, very old in Texas. And the thought I had when I was looking at these two numbers is the risky actions of the younger people, you know, 45 and under. Negative, they don't necessarily feel the symptoms. And I feel like those decisions they make negatively affect those older people who isolate themselves, like, you know. And so that thought really stuck with me in that for everyone that goes to that event, they may not get those symptoms, but possibly that action causes them to spread the virus. So again, it's important for me to state that because I just feel that in my conscience, that it's important to state that I don't agree with it. But again, I do hope it's successful. I do hope people are safe, and I do hope the event is a success, because to hope otherwise would be to hope for bad things to happen. I wouldn't want that to happen.
There's part of me that sits there and says, like, I would hope that the UFC would say, look, you know, you have to be vaccinated to be able to attend our event. I mean, I don't expect that to happen. You know, look, I would be shocked if UFC 261 is not sold out. I just would be, I'd be floored if it's not. And I mean, look, you know, it's, as I said, I hope the UFC succeeds in this. I hope everyone is safe and there's no issues. But, you know, ultimately, I think a lot of this just comes down to us as Americans to do what's right. But I mean, look, it's, you know, how many times have we all been out and, you know, even if it's, you know, you're trying to do your best to, you know, do what's best, you know, sometimes that, you know, people just are not comfortable in that mask. I mean, that's just the reality of it. I mean, I will tell you this. I mean, like, you know, having a job where I was wearing a mask 10 hours out of the day, I got used to it pretty quick. It was funny is I was having a conversation with John Castaneda about, two or three episodes ago. And we were talking about the struggle of wearing prescription glasses and a mask and how much they fog up. The struggle is real, folks.
Mm-hmm. I feel it often. And I know so many people wear glasses and they feel it. And yeah, it's like, you know, shoving the glasses as hard as possible in between that and the mask, like that's going to magically seal the mask and it won't fog up. You know, I was doing that this morning. And again, I understand but I will say this. I do think we as a country have definitely like messed up every single step. Like I will say one of my memories, Jason, whenever I'm 60 years old and someone asks me about the coronavirus, I will tell the youngsters, we made a mistake every single step of the way because we did not have discipline and we did not sacrifice. I mean, it's as simple as that. Like it was, you know what it was? It was like, you know that damn experiment they do with children where they put like a marshmallow on a table and they're like, kid, if you don't eat the marshmallow in 10 minutes, we'll get you two. And the kids never do. They just eat the marshmallow. It's like they were like, America, if you just chill out for like a period of time, like, it'll be all right. They're like, no, I want to go to the island. Like we are still children. I think we have failed. And there are ways in which I look at myself and I'm like, I've made decisions that I wish I wouldn't have when it comes to maybe eating out or going to the movies, et cetera. But I also think it's one of those things where as humans, you look around and to your left and to your right, you see people who are maybe not being COVID safe. And you're like, well, why not me? So it's a very tough dynamic. And it's one in which I think we'll probably be ashamed about. But I would like to see us do similar to what Israel's doing, where I was listening to a podcast where basically they have like a green like pass. If you get vaccinated twice, you have just like a green pass and that allows you to do things. That would be really cool. But we definitely won't be doing that.
Yeah, I mean, I think as the vaccination becomes more available for people, I mean, look, it's, you know, I'm an outgoing kind of person. I like being out and about. And I'll tell you that that was the hardest part for me of COVID life. It's just, you know, I'm not a homebody. Like, my wife is a homebody. She can sit here at home and all that. I'm just not that kind of person. I like to be out and about. I like to be out with the fellas, you know, having a couple cocktails, throwing some darts, you know, things along those lines, you know. And but I think that, yeah, I mean, look, there have been mistakes that clearly have been made. We probably should have gone the Italy route and just shut down for a while. But I mean, look, there was just there's times where I've like been at the grocery store and I'm like, man, there's a lot of people here that do not think COVID's real.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's one of those things where I think in order to be successful, Jason, everyone had to buy in. Everyone had to buy in, but you will never get that buy-in from everyone. And that's, and then it's just like a, it's like a balloon and you poke a hole in it and there's just one hole, but it's leaking and it spreads.
You know, the thing like from the UFC aspect that I saw someone else kind of commenting on this the other day is that when a fighter tests positive for COVID, how quickly like they're turned back around to get into a fight. And sometimes it just kind of makes you wonder, is that what's best for the fighter's health or is that what's best for the fighter's bank account?
Well, you know, the bank account is just the most important pressure that fighters face. And so do all humans. And I think, yes, I think it's probably what I'd be interested to see is statistics of performances of fighters that have made that move. Obviously taking into account fight odds and who was expected to win. I would be very intrigued to see what those stats are like if they performed poorly. But it's tough to tell, and it's a case-by-case basis, right? Because there is a wide variance in the type of effects being infected with COVID has. On one side, you could have a guy who tests positive for COVID but never has symptoms. On the other side, you could have a case like Chimaev.
No, no question. I mean, you look at, you know, Paulo Costa, what he's going through with COVID as well. I mean, it's, you know, it's just sometimes they just kind of wonder what's the most important. But before we get into what happened last weekend at UFC Vegas number 21, do want to let you know about our presenting sponsor this week, and that is HelloFresh. With HelloFresh, you get fresh pre-measured ingredients and mouth-watering seasonal recipes delivered right to your door. HelloFresh lets you skip those trips to the grocery store and makes home cooking easy, fun, and affordable. And that's why it's America's number one meal kit. And I'll tell you, the thing that I love the most about HelloFresh, I am a HelloFresh customer, is the flexibility that they give you. You customize your orders each week. You can add extra proteins, sides, change up the serving size when you have guests over, or maybe you just want to double up on your favorite recipe so your box works harder for you. And you can easily change your delivery days or food preferences, skip a week whenever you need. And exactly, had to skip a week this week because, well, I wasn't going to be in town on Monday. And I just love that flexibility. Every Wednesday, me and my wife, we pop open the iPad, we pop up that HelloFresh app, we decide exactly what kind of food we want. And I will tell you, Daniel, we have tried some food that I'm flat out probably would have never tried. And it is just absolutely amazing product. I cannot recommend HelloFresh more than I do. I have been accustomed to them for about 8 months now. And it is just, the food product is amazing.
Yeah, seriously. Like, the reason why you can't hear my stomach growling on this podcast is because I ate HelloFresh before. I absolutely love HelloFresh. I get so excited every time it comes to the door. It's been an absolute game changer, especially for someone like me, because HelloFresh is easy for me to do, man. These are 10 to 20 minute meals, low prep recipes, quick breakfasts and lunches. They're perfect for your busy schedule and mine. You know, what I love about HelloFresh is each week, they have 25 plus recipes to choose from. There's literally something for everyone, no matter what your palate is. And all recipes are designed and tested, Jason, by professional chefs and nutritional experts to ensure deliciousness and simplicity. And guess what? Let's also talk about cost. This is what I also love about HelloFresh as someone who's a bit young with a job. It's great value. for your meal. HelloFresh is 28% cheaper than shopping at your local grocery store and 72% cheaper than a restaurant meal without sacrificing the quality. Now, that source is from Zagat Dining Survey. And again, I can't stress enough, you aren't sacrificing the quality. I love HelloFresh.
Yeah, I'll tell you, one of the meals we recently had with them was the Portobello and Poblano fajitas, which was absolutely amazing. And they have got a great offer for the MMA Report podcast listener. Go to HelloFresh.com/MMA Report 12. That's the number 12. And use a code MMA Report 12 for 12 free meals, including free shipping. That's HelloFresh.com/MMA Report 12. And use a code MMA Report 12 for 12 free meals, including free shipping. HelloFresh, America's number one meal kit. And of course, you can go to the show notes to get that link as well. I tell you, I love food. I love food. And HelloFresh is definitely the way you got to go. So be sure to take advantage of that deal they have for the MMA Report podcast listener. Now, of course, Daniel, last weekend was UFC Vegas number 22. And, you know, one of the things I kind of want to talk about before we get into Leon Edwards is transparency in MMA judging. And really, this comes from the Courtney Casey fight last week. Fight's over. I'm like, Courtney Casey, 29-28, no question. And then when it's read that she lost the fight 29-28, I'm like, what goddamn fight were these judges watching?
Yeah, that was bad.
Here is one of my biggest problems with MMA judging, is the value put on a takedown is so much more than anything else in this sport. You can literally get a takedown, do absolutely nothing on the ground, and that like wins you around. It blows my mind, and I feel awful for a fighter like Courtney Casey, who that loss cost her an additional check. What does that cost that judge? And it's one of these things of, I wish, and I know it's never going to happen, I just wish that judges had to publicly explain a scorecard, because I think that would be goddamn comical.
Yeah, I think that would be something I would say, let's do that, because there certainly is no legitimate consequence throughout the history of following the sport I've seen for a faulty scorecard. And again, a bad scorecard has significant financial implications on fighters. I mean, we talked about in the preview how Angela Hill had been a part of so many different split decisions, and she finds herself on this fight card very low on the fight card, on a prelim, on an ESPN Plus fight card, taking on Ashley Yoder. And maybe she deserves to be in a better spot, but because of the judges she was. And then when you look at the Casey Aldridge fight, I mean, this was as simple as Aldridge scores a takedown, she wins the fight, right? Like the fight was even going into round three, but I thought it was clear that the stand-up was clearly enough scored by Casey before the wrestling from Aldridge. So, yeah, I mean, you have that. I mean, I would say even the decision between Matthias Nicolau and Manel Cabe, I think Manel won that fight. I thought he won round three. I thought he got the better of the exchanges, but certainly the judging does not have any type of accountability, and that's been a consistent issue since I first bought my first UFC pay-per-view.
Yeah, I mean, it's just you feel bad, you know, for a fighter like Courtney Casey, Manel Cop, who lose those fights that pretty much everyone believes they won. I wish it's something I've talked about in the past, and I've kind of talked to, you know, some regulators about that, you know, and obviously, and I've had regulators say to me, they say, look, when there is a scorecard that I do not see the fight that way, I do have a conversation with that judge and say, what did you see? But there's times in MMA judging that I just, like, we put way too much emphasis on a takedown. You know, like, to me, there should be, if a fighter stops 17 takedowns, it should weigh just as heavy as that one takedown because they stopped it all. So it's just one of those things that I just wish we saw more transparency. Now, you know, and speaking of transparency, before we get into Leon Edwards, I don't know if you saw this, where Mark Ratner was doing an interview with MMAJunkie.com, and he was talking about the differences between the illegal knee that Peter Yan landed as opposed to Eric Anderson. And here's his full quote. He goes, quote, and this, by the way, was transcribed by BJPenn.com. Quote, what we start is with the referee's judgment. That's the most important thing. He's going to determine in his mind whether it was intentional or accidental. It certainly changes the way the fight is scored or the outcome. In the Yan fight, Mark Smith was the referee, and he felt that the knee was intentional, and therefore, because Sterling couldn't go forward, that became a disqualification, Ratner said. The difference from last Saturday night's fight was Herb Dean felt that maybe Anders, who landed the knee, and Stewart, who was putting his hand up and down, kind of baited him into that knee. He felt it was an accident, therefore it became a no contest or a no decision. It would have gone two full rounds. We would have gone to the scorecards. I love that transparency right there. I love hearing that.
Yeah, that does a great, great job of exemplifying the difference between the two knees. And it's something that's really important to communicate to the audience, because I think it's the question we're all thinking when we see one fight rule disqualification, one fight rule no contest. And it makes a lot of sense when you hear it and when you see it, you know, length of the fight as well as how it actually transpired. I mean, there's a clear as day difference between what happened with Yan and Sterling, where Peter Yan saw the dude down and he looked around, he was chewing some bubble gum and came up with the TED talk, and then he hit the knee, versus what happened with Anders and Stewart.
I don't know what the solution is. I will tell you, when we talk about solutions, how about we have more of a curved glove? Because, man, whether you are a fan or not a fan of Bilal Muhammad, how do you not feel just gutted for that guy? A guy that has been grinding, had won 8 of 9 fights, and had finally gotten that marquee fight, gotten into a main event, and that's how it ends.
Yeah, I mean, the only person in Bilal Muhammad's inner circle that was happy what happened was his eye doctor, because he can cash some more checks. That thing looked nasty. I mean, you feel gutted for him. On one hand, the lone positive is he was probably going to lose that fight, so at least he can say he didn't lose. But like I really felt like Leon looked really good in round one, right? Like that head kick was dope, and his stand-up was just really good. And I feel bad for Leon, because, like, who knows? Maybe he's the one fighting Usman in Florida if he runs through Muhammad. But obviously, pretty hard to get a guy a title shot after that. So, you know, you feel for Muhammad, but I almost wonder, I mean, do you think he gets that rematch of Leon Edwards coming off of this fight, or no?
I don't. If I'm in Leon Edwards' camp, why? Why does that fight interest you?
Look, it doesn't interest you. This was a fight that was not supposed to happen. Our boy Leon Edwards was supposed to, he was originally supposed to face Chimaev, right? and that certainly was the type of fight that I think Edwards, who is on the precipice of a title fight, wants, if it's not for a championship. So I do think to come to terms for an agreement is probably impossible. But yes, you do feel gutted for Muhammad. I will say, though, having watched the first round, I don't think he was going to pull off the victory.
Yeah, I mean, like, when I look at this UFC welterweight division, I mean, like, things I want to see is I want to see the top end of this division fight each other. And, you know, Colby Covington did an interview where he just said that, you know, look, he wanted more money to take the Leon Edwards fight on short notice. And look, and I can't blame Colby for going that route. You are going to step up and do the UFC a favor. Now, in that situation, you know, the UFC says, you know, hey, you know, thanks, Colby, but we're going to go on to somebody else. Like, to me, you know, look, do I agree with Masvidal getting the fight against Usman? No, I don't. It should not be the fight, but look, Usman is chasing a money fight, and I can't blame Kamaru Usman for doing that. But, like, as I look forward, like, to me, you know, when you look at Covington, Burns, Edwards, Stephen Thompson, and then, you know, and let's throw Michael Chiesa in that mix as well. So you got five guys right there. I want to see some combination of two fights come out of those five fighters, whether it's Edwards versus Covington, Edwards versus Burns, or Edwards against Thompson, Edwards against Chiesa. I want to see some combination where we're seeing the top end of this division fight each other. But also, I would love to see, you know, is who is going to be that next fighter that's going to step up in the welterweight division. Maybe it is Bilal Muhammad. Maybe it's a Jeff Neal. Maybe it's a Vicente Luque. Because when you look at that 7 to 9 range, it's guys who've had opportunities. Tyron Woodley, the former champion. Damian Maia, former title challenger. Neil Magny has always been around. You know, you look at a guy like a Sean Brady. I don't know how many people want to face a Sean Brady at this point. But to me, like, I just want to see the top end of those guys fight each other.
That's impressive that Sean's already ranked 14th in the welterweight division. If I told you, Jason, you got to buy one ticket. Are you buying the Luque ticket, the Jeff Neal ticket, the Brady ticket, the Muhammad ticket, or the Li Jingliang ticket? Which ticket are you buying?
I would buy the Sean Brady ticket. If it's not Sean Brady, it's Jeff Neal.
Dude, give me Li Jingliang. I want his ticket. I love that dude. He had a good performance in his last fight. I love his post fight interview. Give me Lee. But I think Sean Brady's probably the pick. Hey man, Luki's about to like move up the rankings in a big way. Like he has a great matchup against Tyron Woodley. So like, you know, there is no better fight for an up and coming welterweight right now than taking on Tyron Woodley. Like the only other one would be Damian Maia in terms of like a guy with name value who's obviously maybe not at his best.
In terms of everything else that happened at UFC Vegas 21, how about Dan Ige, 22 seconds?
Yeah, man. That lasted. That was quicker than a Kardashian marriage, how fast that thing was.
Damn. Dale the comedian coming out here.
Yeah, hey, man. Hey, that was quick. That was hey now, you know. Dude, that was quick, but that wasn't even the quickest knockout of the night, bro. Like, things got started off real quick with Matthew Semelsberger and Jason Witt, 16 seconds, you know, throws one punch. And the dude, we had some guys go down hard with those knockouts. And then also the Davey Grant knockout over Jonathan Martinez. Dude, we had some sick knockouts. Why don't you talk about, you mentioned it on Twitter, Pete Rogers was calling Ryan Spann's win over Serkinov.
So we're doing the show Saturday in Osimo. And, you know, we're talking about in terms of DFS lineups, you had to have the fight. You had to have the winner of that fight because, look, Misha Serkinov, he's a finisher. If he does, and look, if he can't get the finish in the first round, he's going to get finished. And he makes the bold move that he had 150 lineups on DraftKings and he had Ryan Spann in every single one of those lineups.
Wow. Wow.
And so, because he saw the potential issues there with Misha Serkinov. And look, my perception of the fight was Misha's got to get this to the ground. He's got to be able to submit Ryan Spann. That was how I saw it. And I mean, look, give Ryan Spann. I'll tell you, even though this fighter lost, Rafael Garcia, the toughness that he showed against Hasparas, I'm really interested to see Garcia when he can get a full fight camp in the UFC.
Great point. Great point. That was one hell of a fight, and they didn't even give out fight of the night. That's crazy, because you could have given out fight of the night to either that or Charles Jourdain and Marcelo Rojo. Yeah. But dude, like Garcia taking that fight on short notice against a legitimately like super talented lightweight striker and Nasrat, and like doing halfway decent. Yeah, shout out Rafa for reals. And then Rojo and Jourdain, another fight you got to watch. Look, Angela Hill just completely was in control over Ashley Yoder. Like, let's give her a better fight. Also, Haniyaya, simple execution with the arm triangle choke win in the second round over Ray Rodriguez. So, you know, overall, man, it was a somewhat enjoyable card with plenty of controversy. I think, you know, it's been a hot minute since the UFC went out there and hit a home run. I mean, I think maybe the last time I felt like the UFC went out and hit a home run. Whew. When was the last time the UFC hit a home run, Jason? Was it Poirier McGregor? Was that the last home run for the UFC?
Yeah, I mean, look, the preliminary card for last pay-per-view was a home run. The pay-per-view didn't deliver the way you would have hoped, especially. Oh God! What was the first fight that pay per view that you just thought could not, you know, would absolutely deliver?
July heavyweights, Rackett DeSantos.
Yeah, that was a fight that you're like, and then it just wasn't a great, entertaining fight. I mean, yeah. You know, but it's just, it's one of these things where, like, you just never know whether a fight card's going to deliver or not. I mean, look, it can get you excited on paper to sit there and watch it, but, you know, sometimes it doesn't get you excited. I mean, it, like, you know, looking ahead to this week's card, I'm interested in the main event. I'm interested to see how does Gregor Gillespie bounce back. You know, hasn't fought since, you know, getting knocked out by Gregor Gillespie. You know, Adrian Yanez, who I had on the podcast last week, taking on Gustavo Lopez. I mean, he's been a quick finisher. Todd Tuivasa now has a new opponent, taking on Harry Hunsiger, who had fought on the Contender Series. He was supposed to face Dontel Mays, but Dontel Mays out of the fight. Also, this fight card did lose the Anthony Burchak fight as his opponent pulled out of the fight, and it looks like no new opponent is going to be in there. Also, I think a storyline with this one has to be JP and Cheyenne Baez both fighting on the same card.
Were they on the same Contender Series fight card too, or no? I don't know if they were or weren't. I know Cheyenne.
I feel like they may have been. I think they were on different ones.
Yeah, but that's unique. I wonder if that's happened ever before when it comes to a husband and wife pairing.
That would be Mark and Montana De La Rosa. Was it early this year or last year? I want to say.
That was the one I was thinking of. Interesting. Well, I know. Yeah. So, you know, it'll be more and more common. Has Nina Ansaroff and Amanda Nunes fought on the same card? I know I'm just asking you like you're an MMA.
I don't think so. I don't think so.
Damn. Well, you know, Amanda's coming home with the win, so it's just on Nina to get that win. So, but we'll see if the Buys can both come home with the victory. I wonder what that dynamic's like if one person wins and one person loses. Like, what's that after party like? Like, is it an upward mood, a downward mood?
Well, you know,
it comes down to whose paycheck's bigger.
You know, it's got to be one of those things where you think about is if in terms of Saturday's situation, JP, he's actually the second, looking at the ESPN MMA website, has him as the second fight of the night, where Cheyenne will be the fight right before the co-main event.
You think he'll be out there for her fight?
Oh, I'm sure he will be. Well, as long as he doesn't have to, you know, he's not taken to the hospital for whatever reason. I would imagine that would be the case.
Yeah. Well, I think someone might be taking the hospital in the main event.
I mean, look, the main event's a big fight. You know, when you look at that middleweight division, I know I was watching a clip from Ariel's interview with Izzy. And, you know, because basically, like, you know, pretty much we've got kind of a little, you know, unofficial middleweight tournament to kind of decide who's going to be next. You know, you've got this matchup between Brunson and Holland. We now have Gastelum replacing Paulo Costa against Robert Whittaker. Plus then on April 3rd or April 10th, the card that's going to be on ABC, you got Darren Till and Marvin Vettori. So pretty much we're going to figure out, and I think Marvin Vettori is the guy that if he has a showcase win, he's already fought Izzy once. You talk to Marvin, he'll tell you he won that fight, even though the judges scoring that fight scored it for Izzy. Like, to me, these three fights, whoever comes out with that marketable win. And look, I think if Kevin Holland goes out there and has an impressive win on Saturday, because you know he likes to promote himself, he could talk his way right into a title fight.
Yeah, I think if I was doing odds on who has the best chance of getting the next opportunity, I would probably favor Kevin Holland because, like you mentioned, this guy loves to talk. Our man is coming in with five consecutive wins. He's incredibly exciting. He also has never been in the cage with Israel. I think that's a big thing. I think that's the thing that's hurting Brunson. And yeah, I think Vettori is another good option. Look, simply put, this fight card, I'm not excited for. I think it's really weak. But this main event is so awesome. This is an awesome, awesome, awesome middleweight fight. Both these guys are just doing so well in their careers. Both these guys are on the verge of a championship opportunity. Also, both Brunson and Kevin Holland are really exciting fighters, man. They have great finishing and knockout ability. I'm going to go with Kevin Holland in this one. But, I mean, Brunson's been here before where he will find himself as the B-side in a middleweight main event. And you know what he'll do? He'll come out and he'll knock a dude out. He'll come out, he'll beat Shahbazian. You know, he'll come out, he'll beat Lyoto Machida. You know, he'll come out, he'll put away Uriah Hall. He's done this time and again.
One thing before we get out of here that I got to mention. Did you see the tweet by old Habib yesterday?
I didn't see it. What did he say?
So, Habib, a picture of him and Lorenzo Fertitta. The caption was, "It was good to see you, Lorenzo. At Dana White, send me location."
Wow. Let's get this started. Let's get the ball rolling.
Okay. Like I don't believe Henry Cejudo's retired. You know, even though I did get some great comic relief, basically Ariel Wani saying Henry Cejudo retired, because certainly his Twitter doesn't tell you he's retired. But it just, you know, this is just another example of why you just can't believe retirements in MMA.
And that's because we believe this one. We thought he was retired.
I did too. But God, all signs are pointing to this guy's not retired.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is, You're never more emotional than the night you retire, right? You're super emotional. You're doing it for this reason, that reason. And you know what happens? After time goes on, your emotions change. You no longer feel that way. And you're just standing there in your 30s, in your prime. You got nothing to do, but you got those skills. And Nurmagomedov's got those skills. I think those emotions go away, and you're like, "Well, damn, I still got something in the tank." And you know, very few guys just leave. You know who did leave? Marvelous Marvin Hagler. Yeah. Okay, there's my transition. Rest in peace to a legend. This dude, one of the best boxers, you know, one of the best boxers of all time. Loses to Sugar Ray in a questionable way. Just goes to Italy, is never seen again. I mean, Sugar Ray won another fight with him, and he didn't give it to him. And he's one of the few legends in combat sports who, when Marvin retired, and this was the type of guy who wanted to fight anyone and everyone in their hometown, he left town, and he did not come back. He stayed in Italy, eating some spaghetti, I would assume.
I mean, look, it's just there's so much money to be made. And that's why I never believe retirements. You know, you just look at the, you know, obviously when Marvin was fighting, this type of money was not out there. If you're Habib, I mean, if the UFC says here's a $10 million guaranteed payday, how do you turn it down?
I mean, it's pretty damn difficult. You know, no matter how much money you have in your bank account, the idea of putting that extra chunk in it, I mean, would make anyone want to grab that money and go for it.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, and that's why you just never believe retirements in MMA. You just never believe. By the way, so I got kind of MMA related. So I think it was Sunday. I'm working on the computer, and I see on Twitter that Liddell is trending. So you know where my mind went.
Who's he fighting?
It was like, oh, what'd Chuck do? Yeah, there's some guy on Ohio State's team named Liddell.
Oh, man. Yeah. I was like, I didn't hear about anything.
Yeah, no, you see that stuff, like, you know, if you're on the Twitter web version and you can see, like, what's trending. And I was like, oh, God, what'd Chuck do?
Yeah. You're like, did he sign up for a fight? Did he get in some trouble? Just, it's not a good thing. It's probably not a good thing for why he's trending.
I'm just saying, if you ever want pure comedy, you just got to watch these videos of the town hall meetings in Huntington Beach when people are just literally trolling Tito Ortiz in the public comment section.
I have not seen that.
There's a guy on Twitter that all he does, he screen grabs all these things, and it is, God, it's comedy. Oh, man, it's so good.
I gotta get on that content train. That does sound quite entertaining.
And I saw one the other day. I was like, oh my God. You know, sometimes you just need that comedy in your life.
Yeah. You do, especially it's a nice way to laugh things off and in this cruel, cruel world, Jason.
Yeah, man. It's, but man, look, everything's good in my world, man. Everything's good for me. You know, I'm enjoying life, man. You know, I'm actually, by the way, I'm actually going to a spring training game on Friday night with the fellas. We're going to the New York Yankee game. So I guess like it's only like 1,800 people or something like that, 2,000 people or something crazy like that. I'm like, it's going to feel like we're at a minor league baseball game.
Mm-hmm. It is, man. It's going to be a weird atmosphere for that game. But who knows, man? Maybe we'll see what your mood's at, too, because not only you have that to look forward to, but obviously Florida State playing in the tournament against the Gauchos, Santa Barbara, I think, right? Or are y'all playing Santa Barbara or are y'all playing UNC Wilmington?
Isn't UMC Wilmington?
Yeah. I knew there was two like mid-majors that are really good. So there's Santa Barbara, and then there's UNC Wilmington. Apparently, you're playing this guy named Isaiah Miller who's real good. So, you know, we'll see. We'll see, man. But I hope you don't get upset in that first round.
I like the most chances here. You know, Leonard Hamilton has he's done an amazing job with that roster. And it's been a weird college basketball season just with all the COVID stuff going on. And when I saw Gino Auriemma tested positive for COVID, so he's out for the UConn ladies. So yeah, but I mean, look, it's that time of the year. You always know when it's March Madness because it's always the week of St. Patrick's Day. So yeah, I'll be watching some college basketball action this weekend, and of course UFC, and yeah, taking some baseball, you know, and I'm sure there'll be some fine quality adult beverages consumed on Friday night.
Hell yeah, man. You got to get after to get those drinks in.
I'm wondering how expensive is it going to be?
You know, it's going to be pricey. You're going to have a big old debt because,
I'm going to say it's like $12 a beer.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. I think, look, man, they got to make their money back somehow.
Yeah, man, that's the world we live in, but I'll be watching the UFC on Saturday night. Definitely, as you mentioned, definitely it's all about that main event. God, I don't know who's picking that one. I think it's a 50-50 kind of fight. I think if Derek Brunson fights smart, he wins. But I think if it becomes a brawl, Kevin Holland wins.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a brawl, man. I could see Brunson being the guy who squashes him, but I think Kevin Holland will get a win here, but I do think it's going to be a barn burner. But yeah, I mean, I'm hyped for that main event. You know, the rest of the card, not so much. I mean, Gregory Gillespie, I'll sign me up for that, but otherwise, I'm tuned in for one reason, and that's Brunson and that's Holland.
Exactly. That's definitely the reason to tune in. Of course, I do want to thank our presenting sponsor this week, and that is HelloFresh. Be sure to hit up HelloFresh.com/MMAReport12 and use the code MMAReport12 for 12 free meals, including free shipping. HelloFresh is America's number one meal kit. I am a extremely satisfied customer of HelloFresh, so you got to take advantage of that deal. Give it a try, and let me know some of your favorite dishes. Always like to hear from our listeners. Of course, be sure to give this podcast a rating and review on Apple Podcasts. That really does help us a lot as well. So that's going to do it for this edition of the MMA Report podcast, which comes out 2 times a week on Sundays and Mondays on RadioInfluence.com.
I'm Jerry P. Tuck, CEO of Radio Influence. I just wanted to take a quick moment to say thank you for downloading and subscribing to this podcast. There are a lot of people behind the scenes here at Radio Influence that work hard to keep you entertained day in and day out. If you'd like to get involved and advertise on this program, or you have some show ideas that you'd like to see us add to the Radio Influence family, please email us at contact@radioinfluence.com. We all have crazy schedules, so the fact that you took time out of your busy day to let us entertain you for a while means a lot. Without you, the listeners, we wouldn't exist, so thank you again for downloading and subscribing to this show. Don't forget to check out radioinfluence.com to see what other shows we also have to offer. All of Radio Influence's programming can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and of course, RadioInfluence.com.